Now, as you've been listening in our news the last couple of days, there's been a lot of discussion about the State Emergency Service, its response to the floods during the March 2012 event, and the relationship with emergency providers, with local government. There have been a raft of visits to towns across the region, 20 of the flood-hit towns along the Murrumbidgee River. The State Emergency Service has been going along and talking to the communities. The region's controller, James McTavish, speaking here to Louise Shooter.
At the moment, we're doing a series of after-action reviews, and they've been going since March, about the response activities, in particular the ECS as responsibility for. And those after-action reviews go all the way from in our region, all the way from the top of the region at Gundagai and Tumut town down through to Hay. We've conducted about 20 after-action reviews, internal and external, and we're in the process now of continuing that consultation. We do have, I suppose, a longer-term plan to make sure that the response activities that we conduct in future events is more effectively delivered. Primary to getting to that stage, we really need to have an understanding of what went on during the event, and with that in mind, we've got a number of consultant hydrologists out in the field now, getting that information off locals and businesses and local governments to make sure that we understand the mechanisms of the flooding.
Anything's coming out in those visits that you've been making to the local shires?
I suppose there's a number of things that are coming out. Firstly, that the main river flood was largely in expectations in terms of the impacts. The second thing is that the flooding in the Murrumbidgee irrigation area was certainly very unusual. The last record that we have of Maroole Creek behaving in this manner was 1931. But the actual impacts in the MIA were considerably worse than in 1931, largely because of the considerable development that's occurred there in the last 80 years. It's, I suppose, unusual, though, that you've got a simultaneous flood event in the irrigation area and on the main river. And in addition, there was also a number of other tributary systems, particularly in the top end of the system that were going at the same time. And, you know, in particular, the areas up in the Brindabella Valley, in the Goobragandra area, you know, areas such as Burke's Creek and whatnot, which all flooded largely simultaneously, which is quite unusual.
What about mistakes made and lessons learned? And I'm not just talking about, well, SES, but also local government shires as well.
Yeah, look, I think everybody's learned an enormous amount out of these events. What it did, I suppose, underscore, though, was the absolute requirement to invest in those preparedness and prevention measures in order to reduce the impact on communities. You know, you can see in areas where there has been that investment made in time and resources, with the result was far less devastating. That said, you know, we've got to recognise that many of the agencies that are responsible for those functions are very cash-strapped. And they've just come back on the back of a very significant drought. And, you know, the investment in a lot of that protective infrastructure, for example, has been very low over the last 20 to 30 years in many areas.
What sort of investment in what type of resourcing and infrastructure?
I suppose the thing that springs to mind most readily is the levee bank systems, the protective levees that do exist in many areas across the region. There has been chronic underinvestment in the maintenance and development of those pieces of infrastructure in many areas. You know, there are a number of notable exceptions, and you know, for example, the levee system at Deniliquin, which has been developed or redeveloped over an extended period of time, you know, nearly 20 years, is an excellent example of you know, a longer term project to protect the city. But you know, in other areas, there is, I suppose, a desire to improve that infrastructure. It's, I suppose, a lack of resourcing that hinders that capability over the longer term. Now, if you look at Wagga, for example, Wagga has a very robust levee redevelopment plan, which is currently in the early stages of going through. Given the current projections, it's going to take many years for that to be completed, simply because these pieces of infrastructure are very expensive, and local governments simply lack the the cash to make these happen. You know, you look at the Wagga levy redevelopment, for example. That's around about a $20 million project, and that's a very expensive piece of infrastructure to have.
And just looking at that development, you know, we've heard talk that, you know, it's going to have a bad impact on communities up the river, perhaps Gumley, further north of North Wagga, and you know, surrounding areas, that, you know, it's going to inundate those more in the flood, the higher the levees are.
Every time you do build infrastructure in a floodplain, it does have an impact on future floods. But the thing we've got to recognise here is that it's raising the levee to for Wagga in particular, to about a 1 in 100 year flood event. The modelling that's been done sees minimal impact in upstream communities as a result of raising that levy, and indeed, when you're looking at the way that the floods do operate, I would expect that in the overwhelming majority of circumstances, there would be little, if any, impact on any of those upstream properties. I suppose the benefit of raising the levy in Wagga, or redeveloping the levy in Wagga to a 1% flood event, would give that level of protection. Is that there are many, many millions of dollars worth of infrastructure in central Wagga, which will be devastated in the event of a flood. We are yet to experience a 1 in 100 year flood in Wagga with the levee system in place. I'd be very much happier when the levee redevelopment in Wagga is concluded.
Is there a big danger of you getting torn in the middle of politics, as in the haves and have-nots, of who's going to be saved, who isn't, in the event of a flood? You know, does that leave you in a tricky spot sometimes, that independent SES person?
Well, it does, but, you know, the SES is here for the maintenance of public safety. You know, our primary role is to prevent loss of life and minimise the damage to property. Development decisions that are taken in the floodplain are the responsibility of local government, and in some instances the state government. It's really important that people do understand that if they live in the floodplain, that at some stage there will be a flood that will impact their property. But that doesn't matter whether you're protected by a levy or not.
Have you had much personal flack as a representative of the SES just going around all these meetings?
I don't shy away from the fact that people do take a very personal view to the things that have happened in their area. When there is a natural disaster, the impacts on people, you know, are not only related to their property. It affects them personally, privately, professionally, and those impacts are quite often felt for many, many years. I do think, though, that by people participating in that process, will have a better response in future events. The thing that you know, we have taken away from this most recent event is that despite, particularly in the top end and in the middle section of the river, despite that being a very significant flood and in many places a flood of record, there was not any recorded loss of life in our region. We do need to ensure, however, that our future operations are more effectively conducted.
That's James McTavish, the Regional Controller for the State Emergency Service, talking to Louise Shooter.